Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight, and by Spotlight Branding, helping to build your internet foundation. I use Daylight as my case management tool. It organizes all my cases, clients, my calendar, to-dos, and emails all in one app that's with me on my Mac, iPhone, and iPad. I use Daylight on my own, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases, delegate tasks to each other, and see everyone's schedule, all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools I use to stay organized and increase efficiency. Visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight for free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. This episode is also brought to you by my friends at Spotlight Branding. I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to keep me top of mind with my referral network. Visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. spotlightbranding.com/TLE, brought to you by our friends at Spotlight Branding. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 49 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host as always, and today my guest is Seth Polansky, a local lawyer here in the Washington area. Seth's firm concentrates on contracts, intellectual property, and assisting with startups. Through both his firm and his corporate experience, he has enjoyed a diverse and rewarding practice, and now he counsels small businesses and artists in securing copyright, trademark, and other intellectual property protection, and has aided them in navigating different contractual disputes. He also helps a number of families by securing their peace of mind by helping them with their estate planning, including wills, trust, and as well as some family law matters involving prenuptial agreements. So he offers assistance to a lot of different folks. And you're going to hear that he has a varied background in music and in gaming and a lot of intellectual property issues. And that's where his interest currently resides with his law firm. So I think you're going to find this to be an interesting interview. I hope so. And with that, we're going to hear from Seth Polansky. Hey there, Seth Polansky. Welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Well, hello there. Thanks for having me.
And thank you for taking the time to be with me today, Seth. Hey, Seth, our listeners have heard a little bit about you, but go ahead and fill us in. Tell us a little bit about your background, how you came to the practice of law, and where you are today.
Well, I came to the practice of law because I wanted to play in a band for several more years, and I wasn't sure how to stay in school long enough to do that. So my bandmates all got accepted to postgraduate programs in D.C., and I started applying for law school programs in D.C. And Catholic University had a wonderful international law program. I thought that's what I wanted to do, either that or entertainment law. So I moved to D.C. and kept playing in a band for three more years and racked up about $100,000 in debt while doing so.
Well, welcome to the club in more ways than one. As a similar graduate of the Catholic University of America, not just any old Catholic University of America, I recognize that debt, as well as they have a really good, really outstanding music department. So
they do.
You I'm sure you took advantage of it. Tell us, what was a little bit about your band? Tell us about your band.
Well, sadly, that band is no longer together. It was called Jiva. It was a sort of gothic rock punk in the kitchen sink too.
Wow.
But I still play today. I play in several bands, electronica mostly. I play in a band called Blind Till Now with my partner, who is, she's also 6'1", and she's the only person who does not dwarf me on stage that I've ever been in a band, or I do not dwarf on stage in a band. So,
outstanding. What do you play?
I play guitar, bass, drums, keyboard, and I do all the programming.
Oh, so a real slacker, huh?
Indeed, indeed. My parents started me on organ when I was about 8 years old. They wanted me to be a church organist. Sadly, that dream was unrealized.
I started with the violin, and I was telling somebody just recently, and I stopped when I discovered girls. And I was telling somebody recently that had I continued to play the violin until this day, I would have played longer than Itzhak Perlman. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think I started playing harder when I discovered girls.
Yeah, well, you had the right instrument there, you know the keyboards and guitar. I mean, that's like shooting fish in a barrel, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, there's a theory that every song ever written was written for the express purpose of wooing someone.
Exactly. Well, before we go too far down that rabbit hole, all right. So you go to Catholic. You think you're going to do international law. What happened?
Well, then I thought, well, maybe I want to do entertainment law. And as it turns out, entertainment law, the entire industry runs on contracts. It's all licensing, you name it. There's a flavor of contract for it in the entertainment industry. Sadly, there's not that much work in entertainment industry type stuff in the DC metro area. You know, I would have had to move to New York, Nashville, believe it or not, Orlando or LA.
Yep.
So I went to work for the State Department doing international law, something that I thought would be sexy and interesting. And it turns out I worked for the passport department, and I took passports away from grandma, who was actually a Mexican citizen.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was... No offense to I have many, many, many government attorney friends, but no offense to them, but it was the most soul-crushing, spirit-deadening experience of my life.
Okay, well, and so how long did you survive before your soul screamed out to get me somewhere else?
I made it about 3 years, and then I managed to parlay that experience into a general counsel position with an IT company that was, believe it or not, doing consulting work for the State Department.
Yeah, well, that crossover here in and around the Beltway is a common pathway, is it not?
Exactly.
It's like changing lanes on the Beltway. You go from government entity to contractor to government entity back into government oftentimes.
Exactly.
And so somewhere along the line, you ended up with your own solo practice, right?
So interestingly, I formed the LLC about 15 years ago, and I have kept it up, and I've been doing work on the side. It really has, until about the last 2 years, it was just a side way for me to help my artist friends protect themselves. You know, I can't do free legal work. I get yourself in trouble that way. So I kept the entity up and running, kept malpractice insurance. And I was actually able to help a lot of my friends with their bands, with their art projects. I've negotiated with major labels. I've negotiated with museums for pieces of artwork. So that was always my first love. I wish I could do more of it. And even today, I wish I could do more of it. But the corporate clients pay the bills.
Sure. Now, I would think that with the changing technology that we've experienced in your background, you know, electronica and music and all that, that there's the possibility of running a virtual practice that caters to a wider audience now, more so than there would have been, say, 10 or 15 years ago.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what I do. I work from home. I work on my couch in my sweatpants. I'm speaking to you right now wearing a lovely black t-shirt and sweatpants.
Right.
And you know, it's only this modern day and age and advancements in technology that allows me to do this. My wife, she works 12 miles from where we live, and it takes her an hour to get to work and an hour to get home. And those are 2 hours that I could be billing clients or doing marketing for the firm.
So the corporate clients, that helped me to understand. So you have a full-time gig representing corporate clients, And then you run your law practice on the side, or your corporate clients are the bulk of your solo practice?
The latter. I'd say it's split about 50-50, but the bulk of the high paying, the actual paying clients are the corporate side.
And that's mostly contract work?
It is. It's contract negotiation, entity setup, equity equity plans, you name it, the gamut of corporate work. So I do a lot of executive employment agreements, things like that.
Sure. And so how long have you been in that kind of arrangement?
About 2 years ago, I separated from the startup that I was with, and I decided, you know what, I've been around the Beltway enough. I've got enough contacts. People were actually asking me, can you do this for me? Can you do that for me? And I would have to say no, because I have a full-time gig. I can't do this. I don't have time to devote to this. So it just seemed a natural thing to do when the company I was with was not going to exit in a profitable manner, that I would just hang out my own shingle and go it alone. I worked like a dog to make other people wealthy. Well, it's time to work like a dog to make me wealthy.
Sure. And you know, the folks that were pressing you to do outside work, those were primarily the entertainment law, right?
Well, interestingly enough, it was a hybrid. The people were in the entertainment industry, but they needed all kinds of corporate help. You know, they needed help setting up their entities. They needed help with contracts that they were getting from Sony, from Canon, from, you know, you name it. So it actually turned out to be a lot of the entertainment folk are really corporate clients.
Well, as you said, you know, the intersection between entertainment law and contract law is very significant. And the way I would think that a solo focusing on that in particular could help is with emerging artists, with ones who don't recognize what they don't know and have a sense of what they might need and would come to you for help. Is that a fair characterization?
It is a fair characterization, but without being flippant, the answer to that is they're the ones who also have no money.
True.
You know, it's the people that need the most help, in my experience, are the people who have no money. They have no experience and no savings. They haven't prepared for this. You know, in art school, they get taught how to do art, not how to run a business. My sister's a medical. This is a great example. My sister's a medical doctor. She has her own practice, and she had one class in med school on how to run a business. Malpractice insurance, employees, XYZ, one class on here's how to run a medical practice. We are sending people out of school, not just medical school, but art school, you name it, everything but business school. We're sending them out into the world homogeneously unprepared to run businesses.
Well, frankly, that is the reason for this podcast's existence, is because law school is the same way.
Exactly.
We're turning out, you know, thousands upon thousands of newly minted attorneys who, in many cases, because of the job market or because of, you know, a variety of factors, their only chance to practice law will be as a solo, to hang out their own shingle, for which they are woefully unprepared.
I agree wholeheartedly.
And so this is part of it. So then, I mean, you've got the corporate clients that you're dealing with. You've got these entrepreneurs that are emerging into the entertainment field that would benefit from your help, and you kind of have to make that balance.
Yeah, it's rough. I mean, there are a lot of people that I would love to help, and I would love to spend hours and hours and days helping them, but they just, I have to pay my own bills too. You know, still got that law school debt.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you alluded to this, but I'd like to hear your explicit answer as to what motivated you to become a solo.
So, quite frankly, I'll just repeat what I said earlier. I was sick and tired of working like a dog to make other people wealthy. And I see the business processes. I've learned very clearly from the inside out in startups how not to run a business. And I figured I can do it better. And I'm, by all accounts, doing okay. I mean, I'm paying my bills 2 years out. I'm making money. There are folks doing this for many years who are still losing cash.
Yeah.
So I'm counting myself lucky and ahead of the game.
Yeah, you and I are similar in that regard. I had a couple of businesses before I went to law school, and I made every possible mistake you could make. I made in those businesses and cost myself an enormous amount of money opening and operating a martial arts studio for a dozen years.
Oh, okay. We have to talk about that now, since I don't put it anywhere on my resume or anything, but I'm actually a black belt in Tung Soo Do. So I've done Korean martial arts for years and years and years. I haven't practiced probably in a decade, but in college and shortly after college, I was very active in the community. So I loved the hard Korean styles.
Sure. Tung Soo Do is very, very popular here in the Washington area. So, I mean, we have the same kind of experiences and came to the realization that opening a solo practice was in our destiny. What's been the biggest challenge for you?
Marketing. There's not even a question about that.
You didn't hesitate very long there.
Yeah.
So what are you doing currently in terms of marketing? What have you done that worked or didn't work, or what's the challenge?
I've tried Avvo. Avvo did absolutely nothing for me.
Yeah.
You know, I paid for it, and it was $100 a month. They wanted me to pay more, and it was limited to the state you were in, and that does no good in the in this area, because I need to be marketing to a geographic 50-mile radius, and I need DC, Virginia, and Maryland, and it would have cost me $500-$700 a month to do that. That was sort of
so that was a non-starter for you.
Yeah, what's actually worked really well for me is I've started doing Lynda.com classes, so I've actually got my first one up, contracting for creatives, and not only is it a great marketing tool, but I'm teaching folks, you know, enough to know that they need help. That's my biggest message in that class. They just understand when you need help. Don't think you know everything because you took this class. And people are getting in touch with me and understanding that, you know, I can actually help them and help them inexpensively on one or two small things. And then at that point, you know, we've got an engagement letter in place, and they can invoke me when they need me. So that's helped really. That's been an enormous help.
I love Lynda.com.
Yeah.
I love Lynda.com. I'm hoping to bring them on board as a sponsor at some point in time. We've had some discussions about that. So contracting for creators, how did you go about pitching that?
So my wife works, she's a predator. I love telling people my wife's a predator. It's producer, editor. And the lingo in the industry is she's a predator.
That's funny.
Right. I agree wholeheartedly. And God help me, I'd love introducing my wife as a predator. Anyway, that said, she works for a production company that does many Lynda titles. And how do I go about this? It was a very long, convoluted path. But eventually, I met and had drinks with the gentleman who is responsible for Lynda classes for the creative sector, and said, hey, you know, you guys have a lot of technical classes. How about some stuff to explain to people how they should be running their business, not only from a business perspective, but from a legal perspective? And I think that's one of the things that differentiates me as a lawyer and a firm, is that, quite frankly, I'm your business advisor before I am your attorney. I can tell you when you're going to do something ridiculous and to not do that. The other thing that works really well is actually just writing blog articles that are topical and that I know will engender a little bit of debate.
Exactly. Full disclosure here, a couple of your more recent articles, blog articles, had to do with the Comic-Con world.
Yep.
And my daughter is very, very active and well known in the Comic-Con world.
I looked at her cosplay website. It's pretty good.
Yeah. Miss Bernadette B, for those of you who are looking, MS Bernadette B, all one word, .com. Her primary character is Xena, the warrior princess, and she has takeoffs on a bunch of others. So talk to us a little bit about your concerns, because I think that's relevant, not just for Comic-Con folks, but for a lot of different creatives who are, if not bordering on misappropriation of intellectual property,
committing to misappropriation. So I here's a great example. I teach at NAB, National Association of Broadcasters, in Vegas every year. I do a class there, and I teach at other places. I do seminars and whatnot. And to this day, this urban legend, this myth will not die. And I'm considering getting a laminated placard to hold up and say, no, you may not use a small sample in your movie. It is still theft.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be surprised, but the number of people who still come up to me and say, but it's okay to use 5 seconds of a song in my movie without licensing that song. That's okay. And I want to throw something at some of these people sometimes, but I realize they've been given bad information.
Sure.
So many of them actually come up to me and say, well, my film school professor said it was okay. And I'm incredulous. I look at them and say, well, your professor was wrong. And of course, there's another subset that I call them the Reddit subset. They just want to argue with me. You know, by all means, you're not an IP attorney or a contract attorney. You know IP and contract law better than I do. You must be right.
You know, in the Comic-Con world, you know, there's a difference between dressing up as a character, you know, and selling images of that character.
Right. Well, and you'll also see that the very, very professional cosplayers, the ones who make money and might actually attract the attention of certain entities, they don't actually say, they won't say Iron Man. They'll say a costume in the style of Iron Man or, yeah.
And I know in my daughter's case, a lot of times what she does is, you know, derivative works in terms of her take on that character. So she has, you know, Xena the Bunny Princess, where she wears, you know, stylized after a cross between if Xena it was crossed with a Playboy bunny, which is a very attractive character and just what a father really exactly. is proud to be able to say about his daughter.
don't frequent any Reddit sub communities if
exactly. This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. As I mentioned, I use Daylight as my case management tool, as it organizes all my cases, clients, my calendar, to-dos, emails, all in one app. And it's with me everywhere because it's on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. If I get a call from a client when I'm out of the office, I can quickly pull up the details of the case on my iPhone and then jot down some notes after the call, and it's all organized in Daylight. I use Daylight by myself on my own, but you can also use it in a team. You can track the status of cases, delegate tasks between one another, and check everyone's calendars, all without having to interrupt anyone or dig through papers. It really streams your workflow so you can work more efficiently. Managing email is a big part of how Daylight helps me. It integrates with Apple Mail, so as I'm going through my emails, I can just click and save emails to a client or to a case. That way, when I'm looking at the case details, I can see a history of all the emails with the client or any notes that I've taken and follow-ups with them all in one spot. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. In addition, I want to tell you about my friends at Spotlight Branding. I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They build a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to keep me top of mind with my referral network. And this helps me generate more referrals and more business for my firm. Their services are designed to help lawyers get better results out of the resources they're already investing into marketing and business development. They create an internet foundation that makes all of your marketing work better. That's because these days, almost every potential client is going to check out your web presence before they hire you. It's important that you create a strong first impression. And that's what Spotlight Branding has done for me, and they can do it for you too. So visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for our podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE. So marketing has been the toughest challenge for you as a solo. What surprisingly was the easiest part for you?
The easiest part, you know, just sitting and having a conversation, you would not believe it, but I'm an intense introvert. I actually really don't like people.
Hence working at home in your jammies.
Right. But I've actually found that I really enjoy helping people who have a problem, and I don't mind talking to them if it's something that interests me. And obviously it interests me if it's an area of law that they're contacting me about. And if I feel I have a solution that could help them both as a business and get out of a sticky legal situation, then that's a win for everybody. And I've actually found that I enjoy that more than I ever thought I would. You know, when I work for certain other entities that we talked about earlier, not on tape, that I would keep my door closed as much as humanly possible.
Right. So you're a little more open and welcoming now.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not forced to be around them. It's my choice, and that's really the telling factor.
Do you have any staffing help? Do you use any outside assistance?
Nope, I am it.
So as I like to say, you're a three-man firm, me, myself, and I.
Exactly. Now, my wife helps with the website. She's in a previous life, she was a web designer. So she helps with that. But I do all the updates to the website. I do the articles myself. I do the Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter posts. God help me, Twitter. I feel like such an old fogey, but I can't stand Twitter.
I'm a little addicted, so I'm on the other end of the spectrum. And how about, in billing and you getting products out the door, typing and all that? You do that all yourself?
I do. At the end of the month, I sit down. I spend probably a good portion of a Sunday afternoon and just go through and do all my own billing.
Well, tell us a little bit about your technology setup, your office setup, how you're able to make that happen in your home office.
Well, I mean, it's pretty easy. I have a triple monitor set up. So my laptop, and then I have it synced up with two monitors externally. I use Dropbox for business, so I can access whenever I need to, secure files. It is backed up offsite. I also have a IO FireSafe that I back up all my client files on and keep in another FireSafe here in the house.
Yeah, and just for our listeners, I mean, that's just, that is, as a techno geek myself, it just, there's not enough to be said about having multiple backups and
yes,
having backups offsite and external backups and cloud backups. I literally think you can't have too many. I suppose there comes a point where you can.
Well, at some point you're going to start getting conflicting versions, and that's going to drive you nuts.
True. But if you can automate that process to the point where they're all linked together, that'll be a minimal concern.
Yeah. I mean, I found Dropbox to be very, very helpful. And, it's as secure as anything else. I mean, if you use email in your legal practice, then you are just as exposed from a confidentiality standpoint as you are if you use a cloud storage program. So
sure. And we've had this discussion on the show before in terms of security, and you need to pay attention to it. You're obligated to pay attention to it under the professional ethics rules. But I agree with you. I think, and particularly if you're using Dropbox for business, which adds some additional levels of security, I think you're okay there.
And friends who visit my house hate it when I tell them they can't get on my network. Sorry.
right.
Nope. Sorry, can't get on my network. And by the way, it's a 32-bit hexadecimal. Good luck.
Yeah, we have two in our house for just that reason: the Tyra network and the Tyra guest network. So just for that reason. So. What's your favorite app?
Favorite app? Huh. I guess Dropbox still. I mean, I use it on my phone if I need to look at a client file. I'm incensed with the ridiculousness that Google has done with their new app. It looks like Fisher Price. It's driving me nuts. I end up using the web version on my phone instead of actually the app.
You know, I never have really made a commitment to using Google applications, Google Docs and the like.
I have clients who want to use Google Docs all the time, and I hate it because it's just something new to learn. I really shouldn't say I hate it. It's not what I'm familiar with. It's not how I'm used to working. You know, I want to work in a red line. I want a Word document. I want to give you a red line back. I want you to send it to the other side. They'll red line it, send it back to me. You know, and the thing that kills me is when clients want to give the other side access to the Google Doc so everybody can just make changes.
Yeah. Well, for me, it's a little parochial, I think. I have a healthy dislike for all things Google and all things Microsoft. Not to say that they're not great companies. They do great things for a lot of people, but they're not my companies. I am an unabashed Apple fanboy. And so that's what I stick with.
It's funny that, you know, this argument carries over into the law practice, to business practice, to music. You know, I can't count the knockdown, dragdown arguments I've had with people who want to use their Mac for creative stuff versus a PC for creative stuff. And at the end of the day, it's all a tool, and you use the tool that you're familiar with as long as there's no glaring security holes.
Right. And exactly. So I don't begrudge people who use those other platforms, Windows-based platforms or Google or Microsoft. They're just not for me. I don't choose to. I choose the tools that I like. What role does social media play in your firm?
Well, I mean, I have to use it. If I don't use it, I lose clients.
Yeah, I would think with the creative side, they're just so wired in to social media.
Yeah, I mean, because they have to be for their marketing. So, you know, that's the first place they're going to look for what they need.
Yeah, sort of like they asked that story or asked the bank robber, you know, why do you rob banks? And because the answer was, that's where the money is. I forget who said that. I'm sure somebody will fill me in. But it's the same thing. Why do you use social media in your practice? Because that's where the clients are.
Right.
That's where you have to meet them. And I think with your client set, that's even more so the case.
Exactly. I mean, it's funny, but I actually, as a business expense, I attend art conventions. I attend Comic-Con type conventions because that's where my clients are.
Sure.
You know, I have got board game designers as clients. They're negotiating their board game deals with the companies that are going to produce them and then the distributors that are going to distribute them.
So you have to go to the latest convention for...
Right. Gen Con is write-off every year.
Yeah. And World of Warcraft, here I come.
No. Oh, no, no. I lost 2 years of my life in college to mud. It wasn't even graphical back then. It was just text-based, and I almost failed out. So, yeah, I won't touch graphical multi-user games. I won't go near them.
But you could go to their conventions.
I could go to their conventions, but people would want to know why I don't play, and I'm sure I would be sucked in eventually.
Yeah, I guess you don't want to tempt yourself. It's kind of like, you know, the guy who's given up alcohol, meeting folks at the bar every day. So
Borderlands and Skyrim are bad enough.
Exactly. How do you go about branding your firm and establishing your firm other than where you're doing business and who you're seeing?
Well, here's a fun one. I hired a professional friend of mine. She freelances, but she does work for newspapers. And I hired her and said, use my initials somewhere, SP, and make it look like the Skinny Puppy logo because I love that band. And at the end of the day, what you see on my website, the logo she designed for me is loosely based on the Skinny Puppy logo.
Now, how isn't that a IP issue?
Because if I didn't tell you that, you would never know.
I'm going to have to look up who Skinny Puppy is, but it looks perfect.
An industrial rock band.
It looks perfect. It looks great. And so you use your logo on your website. Where else?
Business cards, website, little note memo pads. I don't do pens. I find that nobody ever looks at the pen.
Yeah.
Little note memo pads. I tried cups once. I don't think I got any hits off them, but I've got a couple of fun cups lying around.
Things you give your family at the holidays.
Exactly.
Yeah. And hope they give their friends.
Yeah, it looks nice on cards too. I was primarily concerned with how it would look on a business card.
So. No, it's a fine logo, and we'll make sure to include the website on our show notes.
Thank you. It is SethPolanskyLaw.com.
And so, do you spend a lot of time in terms of continuing your education as an entrepreneur?
You know, there are a lot of things I would love to do, but I find that I'm. The last one I wanted to go to was a bankruptcy class. I wanted to take a bankruptcy class. And lo and behold, somebody ended up scheduling me to teach something that day. So while I love teaching and it's a great way to get out there and meet people that might be potential clients, I haven't really had a lot of time to take classes. I would love to take more. You know, there are some things that the tax side of things is really where I want to learn more. So I can give my clients great advice on business structure, business practices, But I always have to refer them to an accountant for tax issues, and I would like to be able to handle that more of that in-house.
Well, it's a big challenge, you know, tax advocacy.
Right.
As a family law attorney, you know, we have a lot of questions in that arena, and I have to refer that out for the same reasons, because I'm just not conversant enough in the issues. So what are you reading these days?
What am I reading these days? So the last book I picked up right after Christmas was Perfect Confluence of Contrary Things. Maynard, the lead singer from Tool. He's also a vintner, and he has some other things. So it was an interesting read to hear how he got from living with his single mom to become the lead singer for one of the most celebrated prog rock bands in history and own his own vineyard.
Well, we're going to have to look that one. It was a perfect confluence.
Perfect union of contrary things.
Perfect union of contrary things. So we'll look that up and put that in the show notes as well. So lastly here, Seth, let's just leave our audience with if there was one thing that you hope to set out to accomplish in 2017 to improve your law firm's growth, what would that be?
Oh, wow. One thing that would improve my law firm's growth, what would it be? I want to get better at marketing. I want to get better at reach. And I suspect, and I'm sure the professional marketing folks who are listening to this and amongst my friends will tell me that that sort of correlates to a drastically increased spend. And I just have to be willing to bite the bullet and start spending.
Well, I'm not so sure that I would use the adjective drastic. I think a more economical approach would be to continue to listen to The Law Entrepreneur and see what you can glean from the folks that appear in the upcoming shows in 2017.
Indubitably.
So, Seth, I want to thank you for being on The Law Entrepreneur today. And go ahead and repeat the website address and how folks can get a hold of you if they want to find out more about what you do and how you do it.
Sure. The website is www.sethpolanskylaw.com. Do not spell my name with an I or I will never get in touch with you.
So sethpolanskylaw.com. And is email the best way, or Twitter or Facebook?
Email, Facebook, or quite frankly, just pick up the phone and call me. I mean, you'll get me. You won't get an answering service. It will be me.
Okay, then. Well, again, Seth, I want to thank you for being on The Law Entrepreneur. Wish you all the best for 2017. And we're going to stay in touch, okay?
All right. Well, thank you very much for having me, and I appreciate your time.
Once again, I'd like to thank our friends at Market Circle, the makers of Daylight and Spotlight Branding, for being sponsors of today's podcast. Market Circles, as the makers of Daylight, provide the tool that I use to manage my cases, my clients, my calendar, my to-dos, the emails, and they do so all in one app that stays with me on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. I use Daylight on my own in the solo environment, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases and delegate tasks to one another on your team, and you can see everyone's schedule all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools that I use to stay organized, and it increases my efficiency, and therefore it only stands to reason that it'll do the same for you and your team if you use it in a broader environment. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days, and be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur in order to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Also, our friends at Spotlight Branding, as always, have been very helpful in sponsoring this podcast. You know, I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to help keep me top of mind with my referral network. So visit www.spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. So spotlightbranding.com/TLE to access your free gift. And as always, make sure that you visit our website, www.thelawentrepreneur.com, to see everything that's going on with the podcast and subscribe to our newsletter so that you can stay in the know and be the first on your block, so to speak, to gain insight into what's going on here. So once again, thanks for being here this time around. I appreciate your listenership. Hope to see you again next week on The Law Entrepreneur.